Good morning and thank you for joining us today. I'm Nicholas Baines, Head of IR for Intercement. With me here today for our earnings call and fireside chat is Paulo Diniz, our Chief Financial Officer, and Marco Zangari, our Head of Corporate Finance and Planning. The presentation will be followed by a question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, you may send it via webcast. The presentation is already available online, and the webcast link has been provided to you in your registration email. Before we start, please note that on this call, you will hear discussions of non-IFRS financial measures, including EBITDA, adjusted EBITDA, and margins. Reconciliation of these non-IFRS measures to the most directly comparable IFRS financial measures is contained in the accompanying material that supports this call or the financial statements report, which is available at the investor section of our website, as well as on the Singapore Exchange website. During this call, we will make forward-looking statements about events and circumstances that have not yet occurred, including outlook and projections of Intercement's operating activities and their anticipated financial impact on our business and financial results for 2022 and beyond. These statements are based on management's current expectations and actual results, and future events may differ materially due to risks and uncertainties, including those detailed from time to time in filings Intercement makes with the Singapore Exchange Commission. Intercement disclaims any obligation to update information contained in these forward-looking statements, whether because of new information, future events, or otherwise. Please refer to the Intercement first quarter 2022 financial report for a basic discussion of the relevant risks and uncertainties. All public information is available on our website. And now, moving to the interesting part. Let's go to our chat. Paulo, perhaps before getting into the details, could you give us a view of Intercement's first quarter in a nutshell?
Hey, good morning, everyone. Well, I see that we are starting our chat at full steam, but let's go. Well, before anything, let me say that the quarter presented an environment that was somehow similar for all cement companies around the world, perhaps with some intensity variation depending on the country. In general, cement companies reported a weaker first quarter as inflationary pressures were not fully passed to prices, resulting in some margins and profitability compression. In terms of Intercement, despite the generally heavy rains in our core markets, Argentina and mainly Brazil, consolidated demand remained kind of resilient, with sales volume of 4.8 million tons, up 3% year over year, and top line of $405 million, up 14%, also supported by price adjustments. However, that was not enough to offset the higher costs of materials and mainly energy and fuel prices, which made our COGS and SG&A to increase nearly 24%. Therefore, and as a result, EBITDA of $97 million dropped 10% year over year, as adjusted EBITDA margin dropped 6.4% to 24% in the first quarter of 2022. However, also important to mention, due to price adjustments of around 15% year over year and some energy price retraction from its recent peak, the month of March itself already posted an adjusted EBITDA 5% higher than March of 21, making us feel cautiously a bit more optimistic for the remainder of the year.
Yeah, excellent, Paulo. Many thanks for this quick overview. Let's please dig now a bit more in terms of top line. What should we highlight in terms of volumes and prices in the different geographies?
As we mentioned before, despite the uncertainties in the global arena, overall demand remains somehow resilient, with consolidated volume of 4.8 million tons, up 3% year over year, despite the first quarter being traditionally the weakest quarter in the year for seasonal reasons. On the price side, the average selling price of $76 per ton was 15% up year over year. In Brazil, volumes started the year in a pace than expected, basically driven by heavy rains in the southeast and northeast of the country, which are the two largest markets for cement in Brazil. As a result, industrial data showed volumes decline 9% in January of 2022 when compared to January 2021. And we had a similar behavior on our sales. During the second half of February and the month of March, volumes recovered, registering expansion versus same months of 2021 to reach 2.1 million tons in the quarter, that is 3% down. Important to highlight that the demand from real estate industry remained solid, given the strong backlog of real estate launches during 2020 and 21. In addition to that, Midwest and South regions of Brazil continue to perform, backed by the agribusiness positive environment, which keeps fueling a favorable income dynamic. On the top of that, Nick, we also have infrastructure demand, which despite still very incipient, start to show some signs, like in the Northeast, with some wind power projects and similar. Therefore, despite an environment of high inflation and rising interest rates, the market signals are for a cement demand not below the current level in Brazil. But we can further explore this outlook later on in our chat. Prices in Brazil continue an upward trend, although not enough to keep pace with inflation. In fact, Intercement Brazil had its average price up by 15% in local currency compared to the first quarter of last year, or a bit over 21% in dollar terms due to the Brazilian real appreciation in the period. This combination of price and volume led sales in Brazil to reach $151 million, up 19% in comparison to the first quarter of last year. In Argentina, volumes were also affected by heavy rains during the month of January, but then normalized throughout the quarter to reach 1.5 million tons, a relevant expansion of 7% in comparison to the first quarter of last year. Key drivers continue to be a sustainable demand from retail segment and also the recovery of bulk demand helped by higher level of activity in small and medium scale infrastructure projects, both private and public. Price-wise, Luma Negra average price reached around $100 per ton, up 11% in comparison to the first quarter of last year, backed by its traditional dollar level. Therefore, volumes and prices in Argentina made Luma Negra to post a top-line growth of 7% to reach $159 million. Moving to our African operations, let me pass the word to Zangari to comment on the top line, that is volumes and prices. Zangari?
Yeah, good morning, everyone. Sure, Paulo, let me provide some color on our Africa volumes. Again, for another quarter, I'd rather start highlighting that the portfolio effect continued to play its role, with some geographies offsetting another. In South Africa, demand kept the recovery trend shown in the last quarter and posted 2% expansion in comparison to the first quarter of last year, pushed by bagged cement demand, especially from home improvements, with sales of bulk cement still at its historical low levels. Additionally, in Egypt, although the competitive landscape in the industry remained challenging, we saw some signs of improvement backed by warmer regional construction activity and enhanced competitive dynamics promoted by the production quota system in place in the cement industry since last July. As a result, our volume in Egypt registered a significant expansion of 34% year over year. On the other hand, in Mozambique, as you know, we are under a new competitive landscape since the entry of a new player in the southern region of the country in the second quarter of 2021. Therefore, volume's performance is still affected by its comparison base, given that the new player was not in the market yet in the first quarter of last year. Reflecting that expected competitive environment, our operation, Cimentos de Mozambique, posted a 32% drop in volumes. Overall, as you can see on page 6 of the presentation, our sales in the African region combined to reach 1.2 million tons, with an expansion of 8% compared to the first quarter of 2021. Although it's historically at low levels, as you can see on the chart, after accumulating almost 30% drop of sales volumes between 2014 and 2020, this recent result reinforces our vision on a recovery demand trend going forward. Referring to prices at our African operations, we saw price recovery to almost $74 per ton, 9% up year on year. In summary, Egypt continued to report a vigorous price recovery with an expansion of 40% year over year after some years of declining prices, benefited by a more rational competitive behavior across the industry, resulting from the combination of improving demand and the production cap policy coordinated by the government. In South Africa, prices increased around 9% in local currency, as pricing dynamics benefited from a bolder commercial approach and a more price-oriented competitive environment. Only in Mozambique, as a consequence of the new competitive landscape, prices were down in local terms, although 14% up in dollar terms, given the medical, Mozambican currency, appreciation in the period. However, it should be noted that the worst seems to be behind us in that market, given that prices in April were already higher than in April 21.
Thanks, Paul and Zangari. Excellent to know that despite all the difficulties and uncertainties we are facing, InterCement was able to keep moving and posted an overall healthy top line in most of the geographies. My next question is a follow-up on something you, Paulo, said before. You said, despite this good top line for the current environment, price increases were not enough to absorb the inflation pressure in the industry. As this seems to be a key point for the industry, can you expand a little bit on that, please?
Well, needless to say that the balance between price and costs has been the key challenge for the last good months, I guess since September of last year. As I mentioned at our last earnings call, any cement player should not pump up volume by sacrificing prices, as it will be highly penalized when costs are moving up, like we are seeing with energy and freight costs. On the other hand, any cement player should not pump up prices, as it would have its volume penalized and consequently a deterioration on its operating leverage level. Therefore, an optimized balance between volume and price remains critical to maximize the EBITDA amount, especially in times of high inflation. In our case, total cash cost base, including expenses, reached $312 million in the first quarter of the year, a 25% increase in comparison to the first quarter of last year, while sales revenue increased by only 14%, as I mentioned. On a per-unit basis, total cash costs per ton raised by 21%, reflecting the material cost increase on key cost elements, mainly thermal energy on the back of rising petcoke prices. As a result, EBITDA generation of $97 million declined 10% in the first quarter in comparison to the same quarter of last year. EBITDA margin was compressed by 6.5 percentage points, although we're still at a healthy level of 24%. Naturally, that the balance between average price and costs varies among the different geographies. For example, in Brazil, we can see that despite the relevant rise in price, gross margin declined in the quarter, leading to a deterioration in EBITDA and consequently in margins. In other words, Brazil prices in Brazil are running considerably behind inflation. As you may know by now, this appears to be the case for the whole cement industry in Brazil based on the results we have seen so far from other players. Naturally, that this gap should be equalized very, very soon as price adjustments continue to take place and inflation is reducing its pace. That makes us feel confident for the remainder of the year.
That's right, Paulo. And we also have seen positive signals from Africa as well, with Egypt in a more favorable trend after several years of declining result, and South Africa showing solid signs of a sustainable demand, while Mozambique indicates, as I said, that the worst is already behind us, and demand may start to grow more sustainably, supported by GDP growth driven by higher commodity prices. Moving out to the below-the-line results, I mean those components below EBITDA. Paulo, any relevant cash movement you want to comment?
Well, following the seasonal path of the industry, the first quarter with a historical lower sales level on one hand implies an inventory build-up on the other, resulting in favorable working capital movement. Therefore, fluctuation in operational assets and liabilities presented a negative move of $57 million, although lower than the negative variation of $64 million posted in the first quarter of last year. CapEx totaled $13 million in the quarter, lower than the $23 million in the first quarter of last year, as we are being very disciplined on this front due to the environment uncertainties we are facing. And by the way, we do not anticipate any strategic or expansion capex for the year. But talking about our below the line, Zangari, perhaps you could give us some extra colors on the financial flows to enhance our discussion.
Yes, sure. Thanks, Paulo. Firstly, I'd like to highlight that after the South Africa debt issuance in the end of last year, we managed to sign two other bilateral loans, one in Argentina and the other in Mozambique, that meets our midterm financial strategy to maximize debt that is held at the OPCOs instead of at the HoldCOs, in order to improve our capital structure in the operational level and overall. New loan in Argentina amounted to $56 million. It was signed in April, and the proceeds were used to distribute dividends for both Intercement and minority shareholders. It was a great work that resulted from the team's effort, especially considering Argentinian environment of capital flow restrictions. It's also important to mention that even after paying out dividends, Loma Negra's financial leverage is still virtually zero. The issuance in Mozambique amounted for up to 1 billion meticais, the local currency, plus a $5 million revolver line. So altogether, the total amount may sum up to $20 million. And the funds will be used to repay some intragroup debt to HoldCos and to strengthen the local operations cash position. And again, those two new loans are not reflected in the closing numbers of the first quarter. Intercement ended the first quarter of the year with a cash position of $201 million and a net debt of $1,453 million, an increase of 12% over the end of last year, mainly as a result of the FX variation of the Brazilian real denominated debt. In other words, a non-cash debt impact. As a consequence of this higher debt metric by FX variation, Intercement posted a financial leverage of 3.2 times adjusted EBITDA, still very close to the healthy level of 3 times adjusted EBITDA. Moving to interest expenses disbursement, it totaled $23 million during the quarter, showing a small increase when compared to $19 million last year, mostly as a consequence of higher interest rates in Brazil. Lastly, in the first quarter, we had a minor payment of quarterly dividends to the preferred shareholder of our hydroelectric power generation business in Brazil.
Great, Zangari. Good to see that we continue to deliver on our capital structure, implying on a better capital allocation efficiency to our shareholders. Paulo, although Intercement does not provide any quantitative guidance, again, for this quarter, perhaps you could share a quick qualitative view for the year.
Well, to start with, there is no doubt that the current global economic environment poses some important challenges and uncertainties, including on geopolitical fronts. As part of this contest and the disruption in global chains, we saw an escalade of energy prices, then rise inflation, and lately interest rates. On one hand, we see that energy prices, particularly petcoke in the case of our industry, that entered a rising trend since last September and recently peaked, but has started to decline in the last months. Inflation also shows some easing in key markets such as Brazil. At this point, and to the best of our knowledge, it seems that petcoke prices should normalize sometime in the second half of the year. Parallel to that, we should continue to see price adjustments in order to cope with past inflation. Therefore, it seems to me a matter of months that profitability will be back to the level we saw last year, although we cannot forget the current EBITDA margin of 24%. Additionally, we continue to see a slight volume growth for the year, and that includes Brazil with the upcoming presidential election. Therefore, though we see 2022 as a year to defend our position built in 2001, it may well be that we shall deliver slightly better results. In terms of free cash flow, we will face higher interest expenses, but we shall also see improvement in working capital movements, lighter capex, lower tax burden, and higher dividends payments, as we just saw in the case of Luma Negra. In summary, yes, a difficult year, but it seems far away from being a bad one. On the contrary.
Yeah, good, Paulo. I was going to open up for questions, but before that, I'm extremely curious to listen to your opinion, Paulo, on one point. No doubt that Intercement has been delivering solid results and showing a remarkable turnaround. However, when we look at the Intercement 2024 bonds, they are being traded at a yield of 14% or so. How we can explain that?
Nick, I could certainly answer that in a simple way by just saying, who said that life is fair, right? But there is much more to that. In fact, although we have a B- rating by our rating agencies, I must say that our credit metrics today are in a better position compared to years ago when we were rated double B. Current leverage of around 3 times is the lowest in the last 10 years or so, particularly compared to the peak of 6.4 times in 2016 or almost 5 times in 2018. However, one should see that the market braced for the largest U.S. rate hike since 2000, 50 basis points, with bond volatility remaining elevated until there is a clear sign of direction by the Fed. This is generating higher nervousness among investors than usual, resulting in a more bearish approach, if you like, to color and suddenly for a potential interest rate refinancing. Although, we cannot forget that we have until mid-2024 to do that. At the same time, it seems to me that some important points are not properly absorbed by the market. And let me here list some of them that comes to my mind. I mean, first, number one, the scale of our business and highly relevant position as leader or vice leader producer in Argentina and Brazil, in a key driver of economic growth in terms of cement industry, irrespective of the presidential outcome. Two, the leverage story with the leverage ratio 2 times lower than the pre-pandemic level. Three, despite some macro headwinds, Brazil and Argentina volumes, pricing, and margin dynamics in favorable trends, and our African business in positive territory, albeit, of course, is more relative to the core jurisdiction. Four, health, liquidity position, and manageable maturity profile with no imminent repayment pressure. Five, successful ongoing implementation of our Penta financial strategy. Six, willingness to treat all lenders and investors, including banks holding the debentures and bondholders, with fairness, even if the current 24 bonds are clean, to make sure we can establish an adequate balance between key creditors' constituents down the road. Therefore, to answer your question, I come to my initial statement. Who said that life is fair?
Yes, Paulo, you're right. Well, I think now we can open the microphone to hear some questions from our analysts. And I'd like to remember all that if you'd like to ask a question, you may send it via webcast. Well, we can start with the first question regarding the cash position and the breakdown of the cash position in the end of first quarter. The question is, how this cash allocated among the different units? I can answer that out of the total $200 million, we had around $90 million at Intersement Brazil, around $45 million at Loma Negra in Argentina, $35 million at the African cluster, and around $30 million at the hold co levels, 3-0. Moving to the next question from Marine Bourgeois from Ivo Capital. Marine asked about the outlook in terms of free cash flow generation for the year of 2022.
Let me, thanks for the question, Marine. Let me quickly here make a parallel to the free cash flow to firm that we had last year. Last year, we had just EBITDA $470 million. So this year, we should have something, you know, in the same order of magnitude. Then we had a unfavorable working capital movement of $78 million in, as I said, working capital. This year, we expect a better result on this component because last year it was somehow inflated because some payables from 2020 coming from the pandemic period, we sit down with some suppliers and we said that we would be delaying them to 2021 as the uncertainty of the pandemic was very, very sizable. At the same time, we had the strategic investment in La Mali, Argentina, that also consumed some additional payables here. So this component, again, it should be better than what we saw last year. Second component in terms of CapEx, last year we had $162 million of CapEx. This year we should have a much lower amount in here. Last year we cannot forget that we had the completion of the La Mali 2 project investment in Argentina. This year we do not have any strategic investment. Therefore, I guess that one should consider mainly the maintenance capex that we have. And again, for the cement industry, anything around $5 per ton, this is a reasonable amount, or a multiple, if you like, for the maintenance capex. And on the top of that, we may have something small in terms of production improvements or even environment compliance, but that's it. The next component is taxes. I mean, last year income tax, we had an outflow of $79 million. This year, we expect to have something a bit lower than that, but not much lower, because you know that income tax are related to the profit of the year before. And as we had a very good year last year, but we are also started that debt push down, making sure that our urban school carries some debt and therefore increase the financial expenses in order to reduce income tax. We do expect this component to be much more interesting, next year. But even this year, I guess that we should have already some reflect on that. Therefore, this makes us generate last year a free cash flow to firm of $151 million. This year, as you can imagine, that a free cash flow to firm should be much higher than what we saw last year. After that, we had interest paid last year of $111 million. That is something, I would say, in terms of expectation for this year, much higher. As you know, interest rates are in a different level, especially with regards to the debentures in reais due to the Selic rating here. And finally, we had last year minority dividends of $20 million. Okay, I guess this year we should have an amount that should be higher than that. We have already had Luma Negra declaring $45 million of dividends, and we continue that trend. And that somehow last year resulted in a free cash flow of $20 million. And this year, we do expect a free cash flow, in the same order of magnitude, perhaps slightly high, but, about the same. So this, in a nutshell, is how we see the cash flow this year.
Paulo, we got some questions, more than two, regarding the timing and structure of the senior notes 2024. What would be the strategy going forward?
Well, as you know, we do have our bonds maturing in July 24. And in May 24, the banks that are holding the debentures, they do have a put option. Just to make sure that they can prevail in terms of their maturity, as their loans had maturity before the bonds. And this is something that is fair that they continue to have that situation. So what we are doing now as we speak, despite the moment being just terrible, as you know, not only for the equity markets, but also for the fixed income markets. So, but nevertheless, what we are doing is really trying to analyze the two, let's say, key alternatives. One is an exchange offer, and the second one is a tender offer and a new issue and tender offer. So, of course, that in terms of environment, I guess that a new issue and tender, that should be feasible only if we have a kind of a major improvement in the financial markets. With the exchange offer, we could perhaps try to do something when the market is not that great. But at the same time, I guess that our base of investors nowadays is extremely fragmented, different than in the past. In the past, when, you know, five or six players, they, you know, more than 60% of our bonds. Therefore, it would be difficult to go after all those investors, especially that some of them, they just, you know, forget their bonds in on the shelf. But anyway, we are pursuing those two roads, talking to our existing investors and also to new investors. And the idea is that now, from now on, every quarter we want to make sure that the company is ready. And when we feel that there is a market for that, I guess that we are going to be tapping the market.
We got a question regarding what's the plan to take out the cash flow generation in Argentina. So how can we have access to that going forward, given that the Loma Negra doesn't need any major capex in the country? Paulo, could you give us a call on that?
Yeah, well, it's important to understand that since the Loma Negra went public, and that was in last quarter of 2017, we never took out one single penny in terms of dividends from Loma Negra, because again, the company was undergoing a major investment project, you know, the Famalí 2 plant. That was roughly $350 million investment in a 2.7 million tons capacity, making it the most modern cement plant in Latin America. At the same time, I guess that now that we have completed that project, Loma Negra has was kind of operating in a net debt zero position. And therefore, I would say that now it's pretty reasonable to make sure that, you know, the shareholders of Loma Negra can start to get some extra benefits on the top of the, you know, the paper benefit, I guess. Paper, the benefit we were having during all these years because the company was just doing great. But at this point in time, I guess that shareholders, you know, controlling shareholders and minority shareholders want something more than that. Therefore, I guess that we structure a dividend payment kind of 2 weeks ago or so. And the idea is that we shall continue to structure payments out of dividends out of Loma Negra. As you know, by not having, you know, dividends payment in the past, the company has today room for
more than $400 million in terms of dividends, and also has a financial leverage position that is basically zero. So with EBITDA of over $200 billion a year, it has some very good room in order to get some debt and also generate some financial expenses in order to reduce income tax paid. So this is basically our view of Lula Negra. So yes, we are confident that we could continue now to have those dividends in the future.
We got one question regarding if we expect price in Brazil to continue to increase to offset inflation. I think it's important to add here that the market leader announced a price increase in March to be valid from April 1st on. So this is not reflected in the environment of pricing that you see in our results yet. We have been able to increase prices during April, also in May. So our price in Brazil operation has been continue to rise during these last 2 months, April and May. In fact, another main player announced a national increase last week to be valid in the end of May, beginning of June. So these all movements from main players reinforce the view that the industry in Brazil is much more rational and more focused on cash generation rather than volume and market share, as we have been telling from a few quarters now. We got two questions regarding if convertible bonds are still an option. Paulo, could you provide us an idea of that?
Well, basically, one of the columns of our Penta financial strategy is the IPO of Intersement Brazil, similar to what we did to Lula Negra. This is one of the columns that we classify it as a solution. However, we do not see that opening this year, although we are very confident next year after the presidential election in Brazil, again, regardless of who wins the election. Therefore, as we have a country in Brazil, an environment where, Selic is at 12.75% level, so very sizable interest rates. We had a lot of money moving from equities into fixed income. So we discussed that with some local investors. That discussion continues, but being very, very open, this is not a kind of instrument that is common in Brazil, although it's very common outside of Brazil. In fact, I guess, 2 weeks ago, I was in New York. I had a chance to talk to more than 30 new investors to find out their mood in terms of the bonds refinancing for a new issue and tender. And when we talked about a potential convertible debentures at Intersement holding level into shares of Intersement Brazil at the IPO time. Two of them, they show particular interest on that. Of course, that we were thinking about convertible debentures, different than convertible bonds in dollars. But again, this is a kind of a new idea that was thrown on the table, and we still have to digest that and see if it's feasible. But we didn't even start the work in order to compare that to a convertible debenture. But it's also an idea that has its merits, and we are going to be pursuing. And of course, that the presence of any international investor that has the proper knowledge on this front would help a lot the local investors too.
Great, Paulo.
So we got another question regarding the page 8 in the presentation. What will be the main components in others? I will pass the microphone to Marco Zangari. Please, Zangari.
Yeah, that chunk of others comprises basically all the costs related to manpower, salaries, benefits, and also third-party services, plus all the maintenance expenses. That's it.
Good, great. Thanks, Zangari. We got another question regarding any progress on the sale of African assets.
Well,
go ahead.
I keep teasing our colleagues that are working on the African assets by saying that, when you have an excellent year, outstanding year, we do have something around $75 million in terms of EBITDA generation. And when we have a year that's just terrible, that we screwed up everything there, we continue to have $75 million of EBITDA generation. That means what? That means that, operating cash flow from the African countries is very, very, I'd say, stable. As when one country is doing bad, the others compensate that in the other way around. But at the same time, there's no doubt that we should find a way to optimize those assets. And therefore, there are many strategic options for that. At this point in time, I guess that we are happy with the way they are performing. We have them on the shelf. They are generating that cash flow, helping to serve the debt by generating $75 million a year. You have the kind of valuation over $600 billion. And therefore, in future, I guess that we would be open for any strategic movement. And at the same time, I must say that we are not just having a kind of active position with regards to pursuing that strategic option or options. But at the same time, when we are being provoked by 30 parts, in order to, give our view on those operations, of course, that we are entertaining conversations along these lines. But, at this point in time, I guess that they are, generating a good cash flow, and we are happy the way that they are. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Paulo. So the last question of our call, some details, some description on the main movements in the holdco level cash position during the quarter. I will ask to Marco Zangari to give you a call on that, please.
Yeah. Basically, the cash movements were financial payments. We had the amortization of one bilateral loan, fully amortized, amounting $14 million. We also paid interest on bonds, amounting $16 million. Another partial amortization plus interest of $9 million. And we also had $10 million in general expenses, taxes. So they all those payments sum up around $50 million. And we will also, going forward, still look for other sources for financing those debts that we have amortized. But we also counted in that quarter with upstream cash from our operations from Mozambique, from Egypt, from Brazil, amounting almost $15 million. And also we had right before the start of the quarter, over $34 million coming out or up from South Africa as well to finance those payments in the quarter.
And the dividends from Loma Negra is still not in the first quarter.
Yeah, exactly. The flow from dividends from Loma was already in the second quarter, April.
Yeah, I mean, let me just add or emphasize something that you said, that out of those small, bilateral loans that we had at the low holding level, I guess that we had paid two of them to go. But again, I guess that we paid, and that was not the the idea. Of course, that we had a kind of a cash surplus position there. But again, down the road, in case we do find attractive lines in order to refinance what we paid, I guess that we would take. But, you know, all in all, I guess that so far so good. I mean, liquidity position is according to our plan. No surprises in there.
Great. Thanks, Angari. Thanks, Paulo. And I think with this, we can close our quarterly conference call. And I believe we had a very clear, full morning, Paulo and Zangari.
Thank you. Thank you all. Looking forward to seeing you here again next quarter.
Nick, Zanka, it was great. No, our little chat here. Now let's continue to focus on improving our operating performance and cash efficiency, and also to build up and deliver a solid and sustainable 2022. So, guys, let me thank you all for being here with us and have a great day.
Great. Conference now over. Thank you, guys. Okay.